Radio Prague News.
The Czech economy grew annually by 2.4% in the second quarter of this year. President Klaus has signed into law a bill imposing stricter rules on army and defense procurement. And some Czech doctors, patients and scientists have launched a petition demanding the legalization of medicinal marijuana. The Czech economy grew annually by 2.4% in the second quarter of this year, according to preliminary figures by the Czech Statistical Office released on Tuesday. Compared to the previous quarter, the country's gross domestic product grew by 0.2%. Analysts say exports were the major force behind the growth, which was, however, hindered by a drop in consumption. The Czech economy is expected to grow at a slower pace for the rest of the year. Some analysts believe there might even be a drop in the GDP growth in the third or fourth quarter of 2011. Government ministers, trade union leaders and employers have agreed on raising the minimum salary. After Tuesday's meeting of what is known as tripartite, Social and Labour Affairs Minister Jaromír Drábek said the minimum salary should increase to around 8,500 crowns, or just over $500, by January next year. The tripartite also agreed on early retirement of people working in physically demanding professions. However, the meeting failed to produce an agreement on the planned tax reform, which should, among other things, remove tax breaks on some employees' benefits, such as lunch vouchers. President Václav Klaus on Tuesday signed into law a bill imposing stricter rules on defense and army procurement. The act allows the Czech military to buy weapons and other equipment without having to go through intermediaries, which has been criticized as a major factor behind several overpriced weapons contracts. The act should also limit the number of army purchases awarded without public tenders, and it will require those in charge of procurement worth over 300 million crowns to have security clearing. Some Czech doctors, patients and scientists on Tuesday launched a petition demanding the legalization of medicinal marijuana. The organizers believe the ban on using marijuana in treating multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, cancer, AIDS and other diseases restricts patients' rights to determine their treatment. The Czech Health Ministry said that a cannabis-based drug Sativex is already available on prescriptions. However, legalizing medicinal marijuana would require a wide public debate. One of the organizers of the petition, a leading Czech drug expert Tomáš Zábranský from Charles University's medicine faculty, said they didn't want to legalize marijuana as a recreational drug. Surveys show that around 78% of Czechs support the legalization of medicinal marijuana, Mr. Zábranský added. The Czech power producer ČEZ, whose disappointing second quarter results were leaked a day early on Monday, blames the leaks on poor internet security. The Reuters news agency released the ČEZ results on Monday after its reporters gained access to a section of the company's website where the results had been posted. However, the company had not then officially released the respective link. The largest Czech energy producer posted a net profit of 6.72 billion crowns for the second quarter of this year, a drop by nearly 40% year on year. The National Technical Museum in Prague on Tuesday opened the last package of frozen archive documents damaged by the flood that hit the city in 2002. Over the past 9 years, the museum recovered some 200 cubic meters of photographs, books, newspapers, plans and other documents, which cost over 50 million crowns. The recovery process will be documented in an exhibition at the National Technical Museum, which opens on the 17th of August. And in football, the club Baník Ostrava signed on Tuesday a 5-year contract with their former striker Václav Svěrkoš. The 27-year footballer returns to Ostrava after a stint with the French club Sochaux and Greece's Panathinaikos. Václav Svěrkoš said he chose Baník despite having been offered contracts from other clubs because he felt at home there. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The next few days will be mostly sunny, with daytime highs of around 25 degrees Celsius. My name is Andrej Richter, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Sarah Borůvka. Coming up in today's program, following the death of Skirat Mašín, the debate over the anti-communist resistance group the Mašín brothers has been reignited. Right-wing youth are dancing to hard-bass music, and later in the program you will hear about the life of Czech sailors at sea in this week's Czech history. All of that and more coming up, so please stay with us. The death of Skirat Mašín in the US on Saturday has reignited the debate in the Czech Republic over whether he and his fellow anti-communist fighters, who shot their way out of Czechoslovakia in the 1950s, were heroes or cold-blooded killers. While some see their escape as one of the most daring in Cold War history, others say they tarnished their moral integrity through their actions. Jan Wellinger has the details.
In 1953, five members of the so-called Mašín group shot their way out of Czechoslovakia in a bid to reach West Berlin. Three, the Mašín brothers themselves and fellow member Milan Paumer, succeeded, eluding a massive manhunt and certain death. Had they been caught like two additional members in the cell, they would have been tried in Czechoslovakia and put to death. Skirat Mašín himself made clear in past interviews that he gained a new lease on life after making it to the West, and fellow group member, the late Milan Paumer, defended the group's actions as necessary in one of Czechoslovakia's darkest periods. In Czechoslovakia, they killed three policemen in preparation for their escape. Then, during their actual escape, they shot dead three East German police. Asked about the group's activities in 2005, Milan Paumer said this.
Well, a lot of people is talking about us, that some people died at our try to get out of the country. But we were living in 1953. And from 1948 to 53, there were so many people hung and sitting in the prison, communist prison, and no one talks about that.
Following Milan Paumer's death in 2010, the Prime Minister himself reflected on his and the Mašín brothers' actions, calling the decision to stand up against oppression heroic and slamming criticism of their cross-border escape. The Prime Minister has now responded similarly to news of Skirat Mašín's passing, making clear he considered the anti-communist fighter a person of remarkable quality. In a statement, he said that he had always admired Mr. Mašín's courage and stressed that his story needed to be remembered. And Prime Minister Petr Nečas is far from alone in regretting Mašín's death. Other Czech politicians, mostly on the right of the political spectrum, have also rued his passing, as have a number of specialists, including Eduard Stehlík of the Military History Institute in Prague.
Mašín was an extraordinary person. Even at a young age, he was led towards resistance against the Nazis through the example of his father, the Brigadier General and national hero Josef Mašín. The family tradition of resistance goes back to World War II. I think the son was a very moral person, and that his death is a loss.
Despite the Mašín's daring escape, many others are convinced that actions taken by the group were not morally justified, charging that they crossed a line from which there was no turning back, not least the murder of a Czech police officer whose throat was cut after he was subdued. For this reason, state honors always eluded the Mašíns and are likely to elude them again. To date, only one Czech Prime Minister, Mirek Topolánek, recognized members of the Mašín group for their fight against totalitarianism. Which members of the current Czech government will attend Mr. Mašín's funeral next Wednesday in the U.S. has not yet been announced. So far, only the Czech ambassador to Washington, Petr Gandalovich, has confirmed attendance.
Thanks for this report, Jan. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. There's an obscure new trend spreading throughout Central and Eastern Europe. Groups of youths from Belgrade to Bratislava to Brno dancing in public to a hardcore Russian techno track and then posting videos on YouTube. It sounds harmless enough, but the problem is the lyrics have a neo-Nazi subtext. Rob Cameron has more.
This is one of dozens, maybe hundreds of videos posted in recent months on YouTube. To say they're repetitive is something of an understatement. They all feature groups of young men dancing in public, some of them, it has to be said, with almost comic clumsiness, to a subgenre of techno called hard bass, and a particular permutation of it featuring lyrics in Russian. The song features the following phrase: "We will bring hard bass to your home, 1488. What does that mean, I hear you ask? Well, as the Internet Daily Czech Position first noted, the numbers 1488 have a special significance to the far right. 14 is the number of words in the manifesto of American white separatist David Lane: "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children." The eighth letter of the alphabet is H. 88 means Heil Hitler. Patrick Banger is a Romani journalist who frequently covers far-right demonstrations.
The fact that they're organized neo-Nazis already makes it a threat in my eyes. If someone wants to play techno with racist lyrics in a club, if there are 40 of them underground somewhere giving the Hitler salute, well, fine, let them go ahead. But if they're doing it in public, that's different. If I get a swastika tattooed on my arm, then I should be arrested. So if they're displaying any racist behavior in public, they should be arrested too.
Confusingly, only some of the youths in the videos, posted from Czech cities such as Ostrava, Zlín and most recently Prague, appear to be far-right sympathizers, decked out in Thor Steindl hoodies, balaclavas and ski masks. Others seem to be football hooligans or simply bored teenagers. There's been a proliferation of so-called hard bass attacks, similar to flash mobs, across Central and Eastern Europe in recent months, most notably in Serbia, Slovakia and the Czech Republic. So should we be worried? Not necessarily, says the country's foremost expert on far-right extremism, Miroslav Mareš from Brno's Masaryk University.
Okay, we can find some links to the neo-Nazism directly in this Russian songs, but in the connection with this stupid presentation, it has only limited impact on public opinion as well as on rising extremist scene. As I said, we can find also strong opposition against this new trends within the rising extremist scene.
Мы хардбас ваш дом приносим. 1488.
Judging from the chatter on far-right websites, there does seem to be some murmuring of disapproval amongst more senior members of the country's active neo-Nazi movement, who dismiss hard bass as too closely associated with left-wing and anarchist groups. So far, the spattering of Czech hard bass attacks seem to have passed off without incident, although a group of youths was ejected from the Prague metro for disturbing fellow passengers. Some citizens, perhaps those with a smattering of Russian, may be more than slightly alarmed to hear boot-stomping youths threatening to bring Heil Hitler to their homes.
Thank you for this report, Rob. The Czech Republic is a landlocked country, and as such, life at sea is not the first thing that comes to mind. But before and during World War I, many sailors from Bohemia, Moravia and Silesia served for the Austro-Hungarian Navy, the Imperial and Royal War Navy. An exhibition currently on in the Rognice nad Labem Town Museum explores this relatively obscure chapter of Czech history. It all started with a postcard sent by sailor Jaroslav Marcin to his native town of Rognice nad Labem from Croatia. Jan Mrázek, the director of the Roudnice nad Labem Museum and the curator of the exhibit Czechs on the Decks of Their Majesty's Navy, explain what inspired the show, which runs through September.
In 2008, we had an exhibit devoted to the role of Czechs in World War I, and one of the pieces on display was a color postcard, which sailor Jaroslav Marcin sent to Roudnice from the Croatian harbor of Malinska. That sparked the idea to organize an entire show devoted to the life of Czech sailors at sea, especially those who served in the Adriatic Sea in World War I. This chapter of history is relatively little known even today, so the postcard and the fact that there were quite a few Czech sailors at the time inspired us to organize this exhibition.
At one point, up to 10% of the Austro-Hungarian Imperial and Royal War Navy was made up of Czech sailors. Czech participation in the Navy is also the subject of academic research. Historian Jindřich Marek of the Military History Institute in Prague explains how Czechs became sailors.
Jejich příliv k Jadranu začíná především někdy kolem roku 1905.
They started serving in the Adriatic Sea around 1905, when the Austro-Hungarian Navy was being modernized. Back then, qualified sailors were in demand, and Czechs, along with Germans, were among the most skilled within the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And briefly, before World War I erupted, the number of Czechs in the Navy reached its peak. Some 10% of its sailors were Czech.
Čechů tvořilo rakousko-uherské námořnictvo.
When the First World War erupted in 1914, the Austro-Hungarian Navy expanded its fleet to include U-boats. One of the Empire's U-boats torpedoed the flagship of the French Mediterranean fleet, the Jean Bart, at the start of the war in 1914, causing serious damage to it. Soon, the underwater boats of the Austro-Hungarian Navy were feared by their enemies. But of course, these very complicated pieces of machinery had to be operated by highly skilled sailors. Jindřich Marek again.
Rakousko si začalo budovat svoje ponorkové loďstvo, které...
The Austro-Hungarian fleet was mostly made up of modern German boats, and about a third of the men who served on them were Czech. That is because those sailors had to be very skilled and well-trained, engineers, for example, or radio operators. But sadly, the U-boat war was a cruel one, and there were many more fatalities below water than on the surface. A lot of Czech sailors were killed at sea. Serving on those U-boats was physically and psychologically difficult, and very taxing on their health. The air was bad, and there was a lack of provisions. So, those sailors had to be strong and determined men.
Czechs also worked as engineers and musicians in the Navy band. But also Czech doctors were eager to join the Navy, says Jindřich Marek.
Of course, we have to keep in mind that Czech doctors were also represented in the Austro-Hungarian Navy. For example, the doctors' choir of the Navy was mostly made up of Czechs. I think it was because we have this hang-up. We're tormented by the fact that the sea isn't nearby. Everyone loves the far sea. There is a certain romance attached to it. And especially those young Czechs who had studied medicine and came from rather poor families were looking for options for their future at sea. And they hoped that the doctors' choir of the Navy would finally fulfill their wish to get away. Among them were some important personalities, such as Dr. Robert Lim, who was commander of the doctors' choir from 1918.
Even though they came from a landlocked country, Czech sailors did not find it difficult to get used to serving in the Austro-Hungarian Navy, says Jindřich Marek. Not even the fact that German was the official language presented a problem for them.
Byli schopni rychleji pronikat do té odbornosti a ani to plavání pro ně nebylo.
They were able to pick up the special skills they needed very quickly, and even swimming was not a big problem for them. There is a nice story about this, actually. A lot of Croatians who grew up by the sea were not able to swim when they were adults and had to learn it during their military service, while the Czech men learned swimming in our various fish ponds and lakes and had no problem with that. Even German, which was the official language of the Navy, did not cause them difficulties. And for some nations that were part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the language would have presented an obstacle.
However, the war took its toll on the thousands of men who served in the Imperial and Royal War Navy. By 1918, fatigue with the war and desperation were quickly growing within its ranks. Following the February Revolution in Russia in 1917, strikes and insurgencies were on the rise. On February 1, 1918, sailors serving on some 40 warships in the Bay of Kotor hissed the red flag in what later became known as the Bay of Kotor Mutiny. One of its central figures was a sailor from Moravia, Franz Rasch. He was not the only Czech involved in it, however.
Another Czech participant in the mutiny was Rudolf Krajbich, a Prague resident who had been a musician on the SMS Sankt Georg. He was a hot-blooded leader and tried to organize the sailors. Some of the temperamental Italians and Croatians destroyed and looted during the first part of the mutiny, whereas the Bohemian sailors were aiming for a more organized and rational approach.
While the mutiny was at first interpreted as a rebellion of the oppressed Slavic nations against their German leaders, it turned out to be an effort to finally arrive at peace or at least be given better provisions. Among those who participated in the mutiny also was Jaroslav Marcin, the mariner from Rognice. Curator Jan Mrazek explains his involvement.
Marcin tyto zážitky pečlivě zapsal.
Jaroslav Marcin recorded his experiences meticulously. He kept a diary during his time at sea, and the entries in it, to this day, are valuable sources of information. He served on up to 10 different ships during the war. He took part in several special courses of training, for example in artillery and on using mines. Towards the end of the war, he ended up in the Bay of Kotor. There he participated in the mutiny, which was less a result of the revolution in Russia than a reaction to the lack of provisions for Navy members during the end of the war, and that was a situation across the entire monarchy.
The mutiny ended within 3 days. Franz Rasch and other mariners involved in it were sentenced to death by a military court. While the legions were still fighting in France, Italy and Russia up until the downfall on October 28, 1918, some 80 to 120 mariners had returned home, deserted the Navy or been sent back after participating in the mutiny. They then formed the basis for the first active army of the newly established state of Czechoslovakia, which was founded in October of 1918. That was this week's edition of Czech History here on Radio Prague. We are now rounding off our regular weekday program with Sound Czech, our popular Czech language learning program brought to you this time by Dominik Jún.
Někdy mě v noci navštěvuje Jety, můj přítel Jety, u mě hledá sklíž.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Sound Czech, Radio Prague's Czech language series in which you can learn Czech phrases through song lyrics. Today, we'll be listening to a tune by the folk singer Karel Plíhal called Můj přítel Yeti, or My Friend the Yeti. The phrase to listen out for is Můj přítel.
Někdy mě v noci navštěvuje Yeti, můj přítel Yeti, u mě hledá sklíž. Vykouří se mnou dvě, tři cigarety a zmizí do tmy, co ty oni...
Můj přítel literally means my friend, and it is used, unsurprisingly, to describe someone with whom you have a personal relationship. In this rather playful song, Karel Plíhal sings about Můj přítel Yeti, or his friend the Yeti, who comes into his room only at night because ve dne se neodváží blíž, or during the day he doesn't dare come near.
Někdy mě v noci navštěvuje Yeti, ve dne se nikdy neodváží blíž. tajemně voní dalekými světy, ty o něm nevíš, ty už dám.
There are several things to remember about the word přítel. For example, when a girl says můj přítel, she is likely not talking about her friend, but her boyfriend. And when a guy says moje přítelkyně, the female ending for the word friend, it is likely that he is talking about his girlfriend. So is it fair to say that přítel is only used to describe friendships between the same sex? The answer is yes, unless we use the plural of the word přátelé. But a more common word for friend is kamarád, or the more vernacular kámoš. Jdu s kámošem na pivo means I'm going with my male friend for a beer. Jdu s kámoškou or s kamarádkou is the female version of the same word.
Prochází bytem, rádio ho vzruší, z lampy má hrůzu, už ho dobře znám. Mlčíme spolu.
So if a girl tells you that her friend of the opposite sex is her kamarád, it is pretty clear that they are not attached. The same goes for the other way around. If a guy tells you that his female friend is his kamarádka, then you can be certain that it is not his girlfriend, at least yet. Hopefully that will help you avoid any awkward misunderstandings. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. If you need to go through these phrases again, you can check this and any other previous lesson on our website www.radio.cz. Thank you for listening and nashledanou.
Někdy mě v noci navštěvuje Yeti, můj přítel Yeti, u mě hledá sklíž. Vykouří se mnou dvě, tři cigarety a zmizí do tmy, co ty o něm víš.
Dominic Yoon with Soundcheck wrapped up Radio Prague's English show for today. All our programs and others are available at our internet address radio.cz. And if you have any comments, we are of course always pleased to hear them. You can contact us at email at english@radio.cz or by good old-fashioned post to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from me, Sarah Barufka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you for listening. And goodbye.